The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
So right now, I'd like to welcome Captain Van Valence Rambarad, head of the Hunters Search and Rescue Team, to talk about the hunting season. And I guess how you can legally get that pork, ham, and whatever other delicacies that are offered. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Tuska. It's a pleasure to be on Freedom Radio this morning, and a pleasant good morning to your listenership.
Mm-hmm. And welcome, of course, to Freedom. Now, I am unaware of when the official hunting season is. Can we start with that? What are the dates?
So the official hunting season started on the 1st of October in 2024, and it runs for a five-month period straight through to the last day in February. Mm-hmm. And during this time, persons wishing to enter the state's forest reserves to hunt must acquire a hunting permit from the Forestry Division in order to ensure that they are entering into the forest legally to hunt.
Now, that part I did not know. Is there a process to get that license? What is that like?
Yeah, there exists a process, and each hunter applies for his permit, and he has to pay for the permit. And also, upon the end of the hunting season, the hunter is required by law to fill out a form which statistically records the number of catches he would have had during the hunting season. So therefore, there is an accounting part in terms of the application. You must pull out that form, or else you will be charged and certainly not granted a permit for the next season.
Is there like a cap on what hunters can search for or hunt for?
No, there exists no cap in Trinidad and Tobago. And I guess this is so because a lot of infrastructure and human resource personnel will have to be put in place in terms of put in a cap. However, what we have in Trinidad and Tobago is protected animals at all times, and those game species which you can hunt during the open season. So during the open season, while there are lots of wildlife in the forest, you are only allowed to hunt the deer, the armadillo, which is commonly referred to as the tatu, the agouti, and the lap. All right? There is a short hunting season for the iguana, which is from October to January.
Sorry to interrupt, right? But iguana has a time limit. You know, I never knew that. I always thought that was fair game. You see an iguana up in the coconut tree and you call, you know, your boy cousins to come and catch the iguana?
No, you have to have a permit to hunt it legally.
And it's
just for a short period of time. And the reason for this is while the normal open season will run from October to January, which encompasses part of the dry season, January into February is when the laying season starts for the iguanas. So that no hunting is permitted during January and February and for the rest of the dry season. That is the time they burrow into the ground in dry sand and dirt to effectively lay their eggs so that they can have their babies.
So this, in essence, hunting is more of a population control tactic than I guess conservation is the word I'm looking for, a conservation effort.
Yeah. And it's also, conservation, and it's really about sustainability. How could you effectively manage your wildlife population without it being impacted on let's say agriculture and human life and living. And it also is about ensuring that you manage your wildlife population properly. I will tell you this. And I am from a hunting family, and hunting has been part of the Trinidad and Tobago experience ever since the Amerindians hunted, the colonial authorities, they hunted. And it's great that at this point in time, we have none of those game species on our endangered list. So hunting has been properly managed. Even if I want to give kudos to hunters. Hunters do, they do hunt responsibly, and they have been part of the entire wildlife management scheme in Trinidad and Tobago. We've not over-hunted. And Tosca, I want to make this point. Yeah? You start it in the rainy season, but a hunter don't go in the forest during the rain. All right?
Yeah.
It's for fine weather. So that eliminates a lot of days between October and December. And what we find out is that the rains are falling now in early January, so that the hunters do enter the forest when it's raining. So that lessens the number of hunting days that you have. The other thing is that hunting has become an expensive sport. It's very expensive to purchase ammunition. It's very expensive to purchase groceries if you're going to spend a night in your camp. Mm-hmm. It's very expensive to maintain dogs, hunting dogs throughout the season. You have to also maybe have a 4x4 vehicle dedicated to hunting. So that it's become very expensive. And what we've noticed is that there are fewer hunters, sports hunters, in Trinidad and Tobago. You get the older ones, very few young people coming into the sport. And that's basically, it's very expensive and challenging.
Well, this is an interesting fact, because you would never think that it had that type of cost to go into the forest to hunt. I mean, you think about camping, you would think about recreational stuff, you know, but to hunt, I would believe there are a lot more things that you need to keep in check where that is concerned. What should a hunter do to ensure good hunting practices?
Well, the first thing the hunter must do is get hold of the Wildlife Conservation Act. And I know within hunting groups in Trinidad and Tobago, it is widely circulated, and that hunters understand the law properly. So that, for instance, at no point in time, if you come across a protected animal, should it be harvested at all. And I'm talking about animals like the porcupine and other animals which you'll encounter in the forest, the ocelot, the wild dogs. These animals are not to be harvested at any point in time. So they must be knowledgeable about the schedule, which speaks to what animals ought to be protected at all times. You saw, Tosca, that we would have rescued 25 tortoises last Sunday in the Gasparilla district. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that story.
They were being held illegally?
Yeah. Well, illegally, in that they had no permits, but it came down to basically cruelty to animals, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not feeding them for 8-10 days. Even if you do feed them, you have little food. You have one small basin of water for hydration purposes for these animals, and that water was green. It was, the basin was never overturned in its life.
Right.
Water has just been topped up. But I'm making this point to say that if we're talking about sustainability, there are animals that must be protected at all times, and that is one such animal. The porcupine is another one, and many other animals are protected throughout the year. You would have heard of hunting the scarlet ibis.
Yes, which is illegal.
Not giving permits to hunt the scarlet ibis at any time throughout the year. And this bird, for instance, must be protected because it's part of our national heritage.
Yeah, it is our national bird.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you, do you think more education should be given to the general public as to what animals are you need licenses for to rear and to keep? Because, as you said, the tortoises, you know, growing up, I had one, but I think it came from a pet store and then it was released later on, unaware that it seems to be, or it is a protected animal. And within that education, then you'll understand how to take care of those animals if they are in your possession.
Yeah, well, we must identify. I'm pretty sure, Tosca, that it was a little greenback right? Which is which was imported into Trinidad and Tobago and is now part of the invasive species. Because just as how you allowed it to go freely, to roam freely in the environment, it is invasive. And that, now, when we out there, like, for instance, when we enter the streams and rivers of Trinidad and Tobago, we are picking up these said foreign turtles, right? Mm-hmm. But you are allowed, and the Forestry Division, let me tell you something about maintaining a healthy stock of animal and making sure that your animals do not become endangered or extinct. For instance, if out in the forest reserves we find that there is a dwindling amount of tortoises, it is important that the zoo has a stock and also that pet owners have a stock, and so that you could easily replenish if you find that the numbers are dwindling. So the process is that if you're rescuing a tortoise, you find a tortoise that was bitten or badly injured or injured in the forest, the right thing to do would be to take it up, bring it home and try and
rehabilitate
the animal. And if you get attached to the animal, you go to the Forestry Division and you apply for a permit to have that protected animal, right? So there exists in Trinidad and Tobago a stock of animals by homeowners as be kept for breeding purposes in case, you know, you pick up a particular animal becoming endangered.
So there are provisions or examples of rehabilitation. I think the animal wouldn't be able to survive in the wild. That's why that process starts.
And I think the Forestry Division is keyed in on this, and they would allow you to continue to maintain the animal to ensure that it is in good health and that the environment in which you keep the animal is one that is conducive to ensuring that it has adequate space, it will be properly fed, and that it will be properly watered. So let's say you have a tortoise in your possession. They will visit your place. They will look at the conditions under which you're going to house them. They will probably make recommendations if they are inadequate. But once you meet the requirements, they will issue you with a permit.
All right. So some questions coming in via 3061065 on the topic. Can the guest identify what species are protected? And it continues to say, some months ago, we saw capybaras in the nation's capital. Are community developments encroaching onto the natural habitat of these animals?
Yeah, well, for example, there are lots of birds that are protected, like the we now have, and this is a good example. We had lost the macaws, the blue and green macaws in Trinidad and Tobago. We're talking about for more than 20 years or more, about 15 to 20 years ago, there was no sighting of free-roaming blue and gold macaws in Trinidad and Tobago. And they came up with a plan. They used the stock from the zoo, and they created a center in Manzanilla, which is now called the Manatee Center in Manzanilla. And they were able to to ensure that these once captive macaws were gradually sensitized to the wild, and they kept them in open cages, and eventually a few flew off and they were able to multiply, and now we have a proliferation of macaws in Trinidad, the gull and blue macaws in Trinidad and Tobago. But in terms of the protected animals, the ocelot is on top of the list, together with the porcupine and the Trinidad and Tobago wild dog as well. These animals ought not to be hunted. There are lots of other animals as well.
And just knowing what animals need, well, are protected, would ensure that you are on the right side of the law. You know,
wild ducks now are protected all year round, so that we had a time in Trinidad and Tobago when you would have the wild ducks. So that those are seasonal, they will come from abroad, they will come across from Venezuela. We
migrating.
Do have an indigenous stock of wild ducks in Trinidad and Tobago. And you would know of the work of the, at that time, the Point of Care.
Wildfowl Trust.
Wildfowl Trust. They specialize in rehabilitation and keeping a stock of wild ducks there. But it's now prohibited in Trinidad. You can't hunt the wild ducks. And that's to ensure that the population bounces back. And so, Tosca, I want to go back to the capybara.
Sure.
I spoke about this little green turtle they were selling in pet shops many years ago, and that's now part of our environment. Florida is battling with invasive species. That is because pet owners import pets from all over the world, and they house them, they try to turn them into pets, and eventually they release them. There are hundreds of animals that are destroying the ecosystem in Florida because they don't belong to that environment. Let's look at the capybara. The capybara is not native to Trinidad and Tobago, right? They have capybaras. They are native to Venezuela and other South and Central American countries. They have entered the landscape, they've gotten away, and there are just literally thousands of capybaras in the central range now. In terms of our swamps, I was there, Tosca, about 2 weeks ago. We found a body on the Caroni Swamp, right? River. So I was there all over in terms of the Tsawa River, the Aranguez River, and the Caroni River. And while we were on this boat, we saw the capybaras swimming across the rivers, and they were all on the banks, and they are very invasive and very destructive. They eat tons of vegetation. You have to provide tons of vegetation for this animal to survive in Trinidad and Tobago. And its presence in Trinidad and Tobago is, apart from the fact that they're eating all the lettuce and pak choi and cabbage in Aranguez,
right,
that important food basket for Trinidad and Tobago. It is also creating an imbalance in the ecosystem of Trinidad and Tobago, and these are things we have to be aware of. Currently, the capybara is listed as a pest in Trinidad and Tobago, and therefore you could harvest it at any point in time, because I guess the objective really is to either reduce or eliminate its population in
entirely
Trinidad and Tobago.
So the capybara does not have a natural predator here in Trinidad?
No. What you find, the natural predator here may be our spectacled caiman, but that would probably just go after the babies. But apart from that, no. But like in South America and Central America, the jaguar and other big cats, as well as the crocodiles, they are the predator for the capybara.
So is it that it's a type of wild meat? Would Chinese consider that on their palate? I have no idea how it would taste. But
Chinese are already eating it.
Serious?
And someone convinced me about a year ago to try a barbecue piece of capybara. They told me, listen, if I have it from them, I will love it. And immediately upon biting into the barbecue capybara, I took it out of my mouth because it comes with a grassy taste to it. And that wasn't consistent with the liking of my taste buds. So I
love how you politely said it tastes awful and I don't want to taste that again. So
sure.
The hunting season in TNT is, as you put forward, is basically to conserve the populations of some of the breeds that we have or species that we have. Another person is still asking to, you know, give a little more specific species that are protected, but you gave a few.
All right. So you have birds, you have the bird population. Take, for example, the Amazon, our green parrot, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're in Port of Spain, you see tons of it all over Lady Chancellor, Santa Cruz.
Yeah, around dusk, dawn kind of thing.
That's a protective species. Although, so Tusk, I live in South Trinidad, right?
Mm-hmm.
The farmers don't want to see the green parrot in their land because in their estates, because it is very destructive. One, they go after the entire piwa crop. You know about piwa, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yes. And the reason why it's so expensive in Trinidad and Tobago is not because we don't have adequate trees, but it's been destroyed by that green parrot. And then they go, what? There was an article recently about scarcity of, or we not being able to produce enough water nuts, coconuts for water drinking purposes in Trinidad and Tobago, hence the reason why our water nut is now selling around the savannah for $12 for one.
Mm-hmm.
But the green parrot is destroying our coconut industry in terms of feeding on the very tiny fruits.
The young ones. Soft. Yeah.
Yeah, then it's soft. So in the birds you have the macaw. You have the toucan, you have the wild ox, you have the bullfinches. You must have a permit to have a bullfinch in your possession. And I don't know, Tosca, to what extent you're so observant. You notice that, you ever notice these guys gathering on mornings with their bird cages at various grounds throughout
Trinidad
and Tobago?
Yes. Yeah.
So those are the bullfinch owners. And they must have a permit to have that in their possession because that is a protected species. They do allow you to have it in your possession with the required
paperwork. Right. Now, right? Is it true that these birds are in the thousands of dollars to own?
Yes, they are, because they are kept for their whistling abilities and that ability to make different whistling sounds. And so within the bird industry, there are guys who are amateurs and they would keep it and take them to meet other birds to compete. And there's also a part of it that you may not know about is that there is gambling taking place with respect to betting on which bird you think will want to
outsing the next one.
I went to one recently. It was my first It was my first outing to see it in action, not the gambling part, but where birds compete against us. And it's really a really complex system where they're able to record all the rules and tweets and everything and who could do it continuously and sweetly.
Well, the thing is, and I know that these competitions happen abroad as well. You know, there are communities that does this. I didn't know it was flourishing in TNT.
Yeah, it is flourishing in TNT. The breeding community actually is much larger than the hunting fraternity now. And it's building and it's costing a lot. And I make the point that we have about sustainability and conservation.
Mm-hmm.
We sure know that we do have an adequate stock in captivity, and in case in the wild these birds there is not enough in our forests, they could easily have a breeding program. Actually, the bullfinches now are being bred in captivity.
Mm. so that that part could be regulated as well. Now, as you say captivity, I also thought about pet stores. What kind of relationship does the Hunters Association have with pet stores and pet owners in that regard, in terms of the legality of bringing in animals? Because for a while, I heard the stories of the, I'm not sure what type of monkey it is, but you always used to see people walking around with these baby monkeys, and then they are abandoned, unfortunately, when the owner realizes it's too much to handle. What is the relationship between pet stores and that?
Yeah, so the pet stores, I think now when you go to pet stores, you're not seeing much wildlife in their stock. That is because this is a heavily regulated area, and the game wardens do keep a check on them. And most of the charges that were laid against persons who don't have permits to have protected animals in their possession would have been pet owners. So as I move around to the pet shops, I'm not seeing wildlife. Again, you used to have monkeys, you used to have parrots there for sale. And I just want to make this one point, that the another invasive species to Trinidad and Tobago is the tufted capuchin monkey. That's not part of the native. We never had that. We had the two types of monkeys in Trinidad and Tobago. This one I forgot to mention. Both are protected. That is the white-faced capuchin monkey and the red howler, right? Now, the one you see that when you... The monkey you see when you're going up the Bamboo Cathedral in the Chagaramus Peninsula, that is not native to Trinidad and Tobago. That's a tufted capuchin monkey, and that came most likely from Venezuela. And somebody would have allowed a few to go wild, and now you have a large colony in that area. And from reports, they're moving eastwards along the northern range. Now, that in effect will affect the balance in the ecosystem, in that the capuchins, white-faced capuchin, and the red howler will now have to battle for territory. One and for food in the natural. And that is why we guard against animals from abroad and allowing it to go free in our country.
All right, so as citizens of TNT, how can we contribute to the conservation drive that obviously we will need to put in into practice where these species are concerned? Also understanding the word invasive, where these species are concerned. What tips or guidelines would you give to us so that we could, you know, be better partners in this fight?
Right. So I think education, I have a background, my career has been in education, and I firmly believe that when you put out the educational material, lectures, courses, outreach programs, that is one way of spreading the message that these about invasive species and the animals in our environment. So I'm strongly in favor of educational programs to sensitize and to edify the population on these issues. The other thing is that I think what is required is more stringent securing of our animal population by the persons entrusted to do that, and by laying charges and persecuting people for these offenses, that will also bring an awareness to the fact that, listen, we have a wildlife management program in place in this country, and you ought to abide by the rules. I agree with you, and I preach this to our hunters every day. One, when you belong to a hunting group, people must see you actively involved in conservation programs. And you are the best ones to get out there. It ought not to be Tosca getting out here. Tosca do eat meat. Tosca never went to hunt. She might want to play in her life. But it must be the hunters who have to take the responsibility. And they do it within their hunting groups, but they must reach out to other groups in the population and speak to them and, you know, try to get best practices out there at every chance you can get, every opportunity.
So for future hunters, because you did say that not many young people are interested in the game of hunting. If there are a few who are listening right now, how do they find the groups and what would be the first piece of equipment they should obtain to become a hunter?
Well, the first thing I would suggest to them is to get onto one of the hunting associations and join a pack of experienced hunters, because that is how you do it. Eh? Mm-hmm. An inexperienced hunter cannot enter the forest just like that, right? And that hunter must stick with them, making sure that he has proper footwear, proper backpack, take a lot of safety measures, apply for his permit, and join one of the hunting pack, because hunting very rarely is about an individual. The experience is what we speak of. Tosca, I don't hunt anymore, you know.
Really?
I am always in the forest. But you know what I like to do? I like to go with hunters. I may join them, go and walk the forest, enjoy the environment, and to continue to learn about our ecosystem. And then I would always pack my bags and go and spend a night, enjoy the activities. All folks playing in the night, you know, cooking, and not cooking wild meat alone. We carry things to cook, and we sleep in our hammocks. And
listen, you're describing the best life right now. Nature is everything, you know. I liken that right now. I mean, not to hunt particularly, but just to be in the environment. Right.
That is how I learned Trinidad and Tobago, you know, by going with hunters in different locations and learning about the forest and the environment and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And that's how I learned all the rivers in Trinidad and Tobago. That's how I learned most of the hunting trails in Trinidad and Tobago. That has been my life experience. I've always been like an amateur field naturalist.
Mm-hmm.
So anything in the environment that I'm a very observant person.
Yeah.
And I take note of it and I'm eager to speak about it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about nature and the hunting season and the right and wrong things that need to be done. One last thing, though, as someone who is involved with nature, is there any, I don't want to use the word warnings, but any pieces of, I guess warnings is the best word to put it, as you see seasons changing and with climate change and all of that, as someone who's been in the wild, to say, do you see those changes? And
I'm telling you, when you speak to hunters right now, over the last 3 to 4 years, we've observed that there is changes taking place in the environment. And I'll go specifically to what we observe, right? When trees are supposed to be fruiting in the forest, they're not. When flowers are supposed to be dropping in the forest floor, they are not. And what we are seeing is changes. So I believe that the trees really confused at this point in time. Take, for instance, Tosca. There are rivers in Trinidad and Tobago right now that only experience one rise in water level and drop for the season, for this rainy season, right? I could point out to Southeast Trinidad, those rivers only raise once. I don't know if you recall about 3 weeks ago, there was some heavy flooding in the Pinal District.
Yes. Yeah,
right. That was the rainfall that affected Southeast Trinidad, and I'm talking about Moruga, Miaro, Rio Claro, Nazaret. And that the rivers on this end, which is good hunting grounds, they were only able to raise to its bank level once for the entire year, and we come into the end of the rainy season, right? And so what we're noticing in this area is that there's insufficient rainfall and that the trees are totally confused when they're supposed to be flowering. They're not flowering or fruiting. Mm-hmm. And these provide food for the wildlife, right? So we've been discussing it as hunters, and we know at some point in time the authorities will want to engage us to harvest these anecdotal notes mm-hmm. we make when we hunt, and so we could make recommendations. All right?
Mm-hmm.
There is insufficient rainfall in Southeast Trinidad. I saw a map produced by the Met Office about a month ago, and it speaks to exactly what I'm seeing.
The thing is,
part of the country.
Citizens here in the city would think, but boy, you ain't seen all that flood water. What do you mean it's not raining enough? You know, it sounds a little disjointed, but as you say, being in nature, you could see it with your own eyes. They're still not figuring out what is the cause,
South
though.
Trinidad and North Trinidad that I could walk in right now that isn't slippery and slidey as it used to be four and five years ago. Whatever rain falls now dries off quickly, and that you're not getting too many muddy surfaces, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know hunters would dread going there because every two turns you make a
slip and fall.
Slide and slip and fall and that kind of thing. But we haven't really encountered those conditions for the year. So climate change is a real thing. And I think what has to be done is either we need to be pointed in a particular direction. Is it that the place is going to be drier than usual or wetter than usual? I'm not too sure if now it's too early to say that, but I am observing that it's being drier than normal.
All right. Well, I want to thank you again for joining us here at Freedom 106.5 FM and also compliment your team on the great work that they've been doing, both in terms of conservation and helping loved ones, you know, in that respect. So thank you so much for taking the time, Mr. Rambrat.
Yeah, you're welcome. And the compliments are much appreciated. We continue to be a volunteer group in Trinidad and Tobago who really use our hunting skills to help find missing persons and at the same time pay attention to the environment in which we all operate. And so we enter wildlife rescues. A month ago, we rescued one of the largest specimen of the red-tailed boa constrictor that I have ever seen in my life, and I have seen a lot. And this is how we help, and I encourage, you know, the other, well, hunting groups in particular, to get out there and play a part in the conservation of the environment so that hunting can be sustained over the next century. Before I go, let me just compliment Trinidad and Tobago for something. After centuries of hunting in Trinidad and Tobago, we do have an adequate stock of wildlife in our country. We've never overhunted. Mm-hmm. We've managed it well. We've managed the young. We've managed the pregnant females. And we've done exceptionally well. In other countries, they can't boast of this.
Mm-hmm.
But you come to the countryside, Tosca, and you'll see how people in the countryside manage their environment beautifully.
Now, you mentioned boa constrictor, right? I immediately think fair. I mean, I said bye-bye to you already, but how do you deal with that fair? Because Snake and I, no, we're not friends. How?
All right. So, from my observation and having hundreds of encounters with both the venomous and non-venomous species, the thing is, through observation, right? They are much smaller than us. They see us as a predator. And their first reaction is to get out of the way.
Mm.
So these guys will just watch you. And once they're sure that it is not your intention to harm them, they will turn and move away. Mm. And that is how we handle them. Because we know that they want to get out of this place.
Mm-hmm.
They know that we are the number one predator in the country and that we will, you know, think. So what we do is there ought not to be a fear of snakes. their defense mechanism is to get out quickly.
As quickly as
However,
possible.
They look scary. Not scary. It's frightening to look at. I agree with that. And the thing is, most of your encounters is by chance. Sorry, it's a sudden encounter. It's not that you could spot them. You spot some from far and whatnot.
But yeah, I guess experience times, would teach you that. Yeah.
Yeah, most of the times it's by glancing down on the ground, you spot them and you jump back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that is the fear with snakes. Somebody, most women will jump and squeal and run from here to where that's been
well,
without
yeah.
nothing from. Right?
Yes.
Right.
But
so that's the experience. But yeah. The experience really is that they're lovely creatures. They play a part in the ecosystem and they're natural pest eradicators. Mm-hmm. And they only have one intention when they have an encounter with a human being, and that is to escape. And so if we have to get hold of one, we will wait until he plans his escape and starts to move and just gently grab him behind the neck and take him and put him back into the forested environment.
Thank you so much, Mr. Rambat. And we will speak again. And here's to a very safe and productive hunting season.
Right. Thanks very much. And I wish you and your listenership the best. And do enjoy the Yuletide season, which is upon us.
Same to you. Enjoy your day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.